So it's a Nelcast 11 AM meeting.
So this meeting is recorded.
I had to figure it out. I came to know from Rizalit and if you come to Bombay, why don't you meet me?
Okay.
When are you meeting? See, I'll come back at 1 and then we have a quick lunch. Or if you want, I'll drop you something.
So what meeting can we come to the three here? We'll figure it out somewhere.
Whatever you say, I'll come at 1, we'll talk.
Sure.
Nothing else. And when you should work in, we'll talk at 1 and then
bye.
Okay, bye.
I personally don't know the past of the company's history. If you could just brief me on that, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah, we can start with that. Mm-hmm. We can take it however you want to go. I guess there are a few people that haven't shown up now, but so just a quick background on Nelcast. So the company was established in 1982.
Okay.
Started commercial operations in 1985. We make ductile and gray iron castings. Primarily, our biggest segments are the commercial vehicle segment, the tractor segment, And then exports. Exports is a mix of commercial vehicle, a little bit of off-highway and tractor, and passenger vehicle as well, which is kind of the pickup truck SUV kind of market. We have three plants. Let's go to the next one. We have three plant locations, Gudu, Poneri, and Pettaparia. All three are between Chennai and Nellore, which is about 150 kilometers north of Chennai, 180 kilometers north of Chennai, all on off that same Chennai-Calcutta highway. So all of them would be within 10 minutes of the highway. So here we've got in the three plants. Gudur is the original plant that started in 1985, but we've upgraded all the lines there to fully automated lines. We completed the last project just last year in 2022. Poneri, we've set up that plant in 96, and then we did a major upgrade in terms of putting in an automated line in 2001. And then our Pettaparia plant, which is our newest plant, we started in 2018 with line 1, and then we added line 2 during COVID in 2020. I've got a slight sore throat that I'm trying to work through. What's unique about line 2 is that it's about 2.1 meters by 1.2 meters. So this lets us produce parts that are parts that I don't believe anybody in the country can make and at good volumes. So there might be other lines of this size, but those lines are typically rated for between 5 to 8 moles per hour. This line is rated for up to 60 moles per hour. Right? So from a size and productivity, this is very unique in the country, probably somewhere between half a dozen to a dozen such lines in the world that are there. Right. In terms of our products and product mix, okay, just go to that slide, your products. So in terms of our products and product mix, on the commercial vehicles, I think there's three products I'd like to highlight. The forward differential carrier, the rear differential carrier, and the bogie suspension bracket. So on the forward differential carrier, we have, I believe, something close to about 90% market share in India. So whether you see a Tata truck, a Leyland truck, or a Bharat Benz truck, or a Volvo Eicher truck, chances are you're seeing these products come from us. So these forward differential carriers are used in more heavy commercial vehicle applications, like, for example, tippers, right? And some tractor trailer applications. A typical haulage vehicle will not have the forward differential carrier.
Okay.
The rear differential carrier will be there in all vehicles, right? Whether it's a light vehicle, ICV or MCV, HCV, all of them will have rear to be different sizes. The bogie suspension bracket again applies for towards this construction focused and mining focused area, which is the tipper vehicles. So one of the reasons we are excited about this industry and this product mix is we believe that the tipper industry is going to do very well, right? Within commercial vehicle, right, irrespective of whether you're positive or negative on the sector, we think within the sector, tippers will do very well. And the reason for that is the infra spend, right? We believe that as more and more roads, bridges, everything gets constructed, these tippers are used at all of the construction sites, and there will be a greater need for these, and this will grow to a more significant portion of the market. I believe today it might be somewhere around 20% or so. And the casting content per vehicle on a tipper is higher. And our share of that casting content is even higher, right? So, like I mentioned, the forward differential carrier, there would be one of those. Those bogie suspension bracket, there would be two of those, right? And these are things that where we have 90%, 70% kind of market shares in these kind of. That's something that's going to help help kind of propel our growth within the sector. One, we think, you know, CV cycle hasn't played out yet. We think still think there's a lot of upside that's there on the CV cycle. But within the CV cycle, we specifically think that the tipper segment is going to do incredibly well, both short, medium, and long term. Sorry, all three, short, medium, and long term. When I say short, I'm talking about like next couple of quarters to 1 year to 5 years. I think this is a segment that's going to do well because I strongly believe India is going to have that infra push. Right, that we're just seeing the early days of it. And I think as India continues to develop infra over the next few years, we will see this segment do extremely well. And so we believe that compared to the overall CV market, we should be able to outpace the growth on the domestic side. on tractors, so tractors we think is a fairly stable business. We're not going to see anything exciting happening in tractors.
Yep.
Or, you know, 10% growth will be a phenomenal year, and probably a 7-8% degrowth will be a terrible year. Right? I think that's what the industry looks like it's shaping up to be, because of the penetration is still quite good. But I mean, if you talk to the guys at TAFE or Mahindra, they'll tell you penetration is still very poor. So, but in any case, right, it's the base level is already at a very high level, right? 940,000 tractors, 944,000 tractors, I think, was the number for last year, right? So that was, so we think that, you know, tractors are going to be relatively stable. Within that, though, one of the newer products that we've introduced is this four-wheel drive axle housing. So the length of the product is 1.4 to 1.5 meters. Which again is something that makes it unique for us to be able to produce this in India, because I believe other than us producing this in India, all others of these are imported from China, right? And out of the three guys that make this in India, two now buy from us, and the third one we are in the development process.
What's the the longer length as you mentioned?
Yeah, so I mean, for us, it's an import substitute, right? One, you know, from a country standpoint. And because we set up the new line, which was capable of producing this, we're able to do this product.
Okay.
So not everyone can make in India, because we are the only one who is having this much bigger size. Molding line.
So, and then on the heavy equipment, I think the trumpet axle housing we've been doing for some time. We also export those across into Europe as well quite a bit. So with this monolithic axle housing, again, is something that component looks a little small there. It's actually 160 kilos, almost 1.6, 1.7 meters long. Again, this is something I think unique. To be honest, there is one other supplier that has a line capable of producing this, was producing this.
Okay.
They don't anymore because the customer moved the business to us.
Okay.
For quality reasons. But the product of this, otherwise all other products of this nature are usually imported into India from China or produced in a different type of a more expensive process. So the forklift steer axle is a new business for us, new segment, completely new segment. Some delays in start of production. This was designed to be on the next generation of a US forklift. I think that customer is having some difficulties validating their product and all of that due to other reasons, not related to the axle. So eventually when that launches, this is a segment that will also have a contribution towards having a better diversification for us. Railways, we make these brake disc friction rings which go on the Rajdhani Shatabdi high speed, what they call the LHB coaches on the higher speed trains. And we also make the base plates for all the metro rails across the country.
How much does railway contribute in the overall?
About 2%.
Yeah, last quarter if we take about
2.5%. Yeah, so off highway is also maybe around
3%. Yeah, that I'm
right. Commercial vehicle will be about 40.
40, right?
40, tractor 30.
30, yeah.
And then about 30% is export.
Right.
Okay. So now in that export of things, but big chunk goes to, let's say, the commercial vehicle market in US. And if you just take the US commercial vehicle market, we just did a quick back of the envelope calculation. There's about 300,000 or so Class 8 trucks that are sold. So each Class 8 truck requires a forward and a rear differential carrier, so two differential carriers. And there's about 240,000 or so of these Class 5, 6, 7 trucks that are sold. So if you were to add this up, right, so the 3 lakh times 2 for two differential carriers plus 2,40,000, 8,40,000, roughly translates to about 70,000 trucks a month are being produced in the U.S. Out of this 70,000, I believe we will be supplying differential carriers for about 20,000 of those. So we already built a fairly significant market share there. And we think that there's the opportunity to expand that market share, and we're going to grow. Overall export, and then another new business that we have in the exports, at the passenger vehicle side, that is, we're producing the differential carriers for the, Chevy Colorado pickup truck. In the U.S. So if you were to buy a 2023 to 2031 Chevy Colorado, whichever year you buy it, if you were to buy one in the US, it will have a hard differential carrier on it. And also inside the differential cases, we supply them to the same company in India, and then they assemble the gears and then they ship it to their parent company in the US.
How many of those companies are there in the US who are producing these differential carriers already?
Casting companies, you mean?
Yeah.
Two or three.
And
majority.
You're saying we are the only ones who are doing it?
No, we're not the only ones, but we've got significant market share, right? So forward differential carrier, we've got close to
90%. Yeah, that basically means 90% market share.
But the rear differential carrier will be probably about just under 70%. All right, and then come passenger vehicle side, there's others that do it. We don't do anything for passenger. So, I mean, the market exists. And in the US, if you look at this forward differential carrier and rear differential carrier, practically there are one or two guys only that do it. So I think, so exports has been overall, as a picture, has been a quite a good growth story for us in the past few years. So we actually, you know, if you rewind that back a few more years, actually, FY15 we did some 2.7 crore of sales.
This was very impressive, and I actually saw the last PPT what you mentioned.
Yeah.
The trajectory has been wonderful in exports.
Yeah. So I think last year we guided towards about 300 crores. We were able to do slightly better than that.
Yes.
This year I think, you know, 400 seems to be very much on the card. So hopefully we can beat that again this year. And you know, this is, you know, some of the products that I mentioned to you are what are driving this growth.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, you know, there's a lot of issues with foundries across the West, right, both US as well as in Europe. The US, a lot of these foundries haven't really invested, I would say, in the last 30 years. There have been a lot of capacities that have been taken out over the last 30 years. So, one, I think that's impacted them in terms of, you know, the kind of equipment they have and all of that. Typically, is a little bit older. But the second thing also is about labor, right?
Labor.
A lot of people who were experienced, been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
close to retirement, during COVID, they just retired, right? And so they're not back in the workforce either. And they're really struggling to find a younger workforce that will come work in what I would consider a harsh environment, right? So, I mean, if you've got molten iron at 1,500 degrees Celsius, I would definitely not consider that to be a very friendly environment. You know, and when you see that, you know, malls, you know, restaurants are all struggling for employees, it's much harder for somebody to,
get employees
in this segment, right? So we think that that's going to continue. That's going to drive more casting towards us. We feel that the kind of maybe some of the higher volume, lower complexity type of castings are more likely to be automated and produced there because there's some cost savings that they can get through automation right there. That will, you know, which we have to compete with and offset through and freight costs that they don't have. And so when we consider that, you know, automation might be able to offset whatever, you know, labor savings that are there. But we feel generally, you know, fairly good about it.
I'm just trying to understand the nature of the industry, since we say that there are limited number of players over here, as well as in the US market as well. Is the margin profile of the industry itself low because of the market size or because of what? Because there are limited players for a reason, right?
So what I'm talking about is only like specific products, right? If you look at the overall size of the industry, the number of players will be in the tens of thousands, right, in India.
Right.
Okay, but these specific products, I mean, I think you're right. I think there is some amount of legacy business and pricing and all of that also that is, you know, part of the equation on some of the products, but you know that we have the opportunity to do better. You know, as we improve our capacity utilizations, we will see that filter down also into the financial performance, right?
So currently, in the number of products that you mentioned, that you have 70 or 90% of market share, how much is the margin difference? So, for example, your overall margins are in the higher single digit. What would be the margins over here in these products?
I would say certainly exports we expect a higher margin, and we do believe that we get it, and commensurate with also some hidden costs and things that will be there for sure. Right, so so that's something that's there in the export pricing built into it. Domestically also, it's about being competitive, right? It's, I mean, yes, we have a significant market share, but we have to be competitive with what somebody else can do in order for us to keep the business, right? Otherwise, you know, somebody will come with to you with a complex part, and then, you know, eventually they will, you know, try to find things to reduce costs, right? So you have to be remain attractive through the business, which I think we're able to do, right, with the pricing that we have. You know, largely speaking, I would say a bigger chunk of our business, right? Earlier, we used to do a lot more simpler parts and all of that. I'm talking about perhaps about 10 years ago or so. I think we've transformed our product mix over the last 10 years. And then we've also, and as part of that, we've also transformed our facilities over the last 10 years in terms of being able to produce a more complex, you know, product mix. But I think what we're trying to work towards over the next couple of years is to, one, improve our capacity utilization realizations. So last year we did about 85,000 tons approximately, out of a, you know, total capacity of about 160,000. The reality is about 80% of that is expecting about 80% of that 160,000 is realistic. So they lack in 25, lack in 30. So we think we can get there within the next year or two.
50% growth in terms of your production. So in the next 2 years,
it's realistic. Yeah, we think so. Yeah.
You so the products that you mentioned that you are doing much more complex in nature. You didn't mention the nature. Are it like in the range of 12 to 15%? I just need a ballpark figure of that. Okay.
So rather than percent, we like to think about margins as a rupees per kg kind of a thing.
Yeah, that also makes sense.
Right. So I mean, the average EBITDA that we had, right, last quarter, I think what we reported was 11.7 rupees per kg. That was for last quarter.
Mm.
You know, we've got some that would be in excess of even 20 rupees a kg. But on average, I would say, you know, exports is probably closer to about a 15-ish kind of a number. Domestic is probably closer to about a 10-ish kind of a number, just give or take, right, a little bit. And it depends on the specific product. But that's the general margin profile.
So what we are saying is eventually for the next 2 years we are not going to be needing any further capacity. And
not significantly, right? We'll be making some capex, we'll be making some small capex.
Right.
But we won't be looking at a greenfield facility or anything like that.
Correct.
We'll do some modernization, some product mix specific to get that capacity utilization to go up. But we won't.
What would be the major driver for this growth in our volumes? Will it be the export markets or the domestic markets?
So I think there's going to be two big drivers, three big drivers that will be there. One is going to come out of the tipper segment sales with, driven by infra spend.
Mm-hmm.
That will go up,
mm-hmm.
and that will definitely help. Second is going to be growth in exports, which we believe is going to happen. We have some new product launches that will happen towards the end of this year, and some more that will happen over the next in 2024. And then I think the third one is also new products, right? As we're making, as we've got this bigger line, started making these tractor four-wheel drive axles, we're also going to start making complete axles, housing, for commercial vehicles also, right? Just kicked off that project.
So what's the order book for the exports?
So I think this year we believe that we should be in excess of about 400 crores or so. Our revenue will come from exports.
This is a revenue for current year, right?
Yeah.
But then you will also have some multi-year order book, right?
These will roll over into next year. To my knowledge, everything that's running right now will continue running next year.
Right.
And the year after, right?
So what we were looking is what is that total contract value over the lifetime? Like people announce multiple lifetime contracts.
Yeah.
What is that value for you right now?
So we actually don't do that. And I'll just give you a reason why. So we've got two programs where I know when is end of life.
Okay.
Okay. So one, which are on the light vehicle side, right? So we're producing the diff carrier for the Chevy Colorado. We're producing the diff carrier for the Ford Super Duty. Right. So if you go to the US, you go to a dealership and you say, I want to buy the Ford Super Duty, he'll say, okay, which model, which engine, which axle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you simplify it, you get a small, medium, and a large axle. If you get the large axle, really should be called a XXL axle, that differential carrier is made by us, right? So that's probably, if I recall correctly, that's probably a 5-year contract, right? We started about a year ago. The other, the Chevy Colorado ones are 8 months, right? So those two have some life. The others are just going on, right? So some of these products that we have are probably products that have been going on in the market, in the commercial vehicle side in the U.S. These axles have been in the market for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And we don't see anything on the anvil replacing them. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's kind of, so they started a study about 2 years ago to look at something to replace them, but they found that cost effectively, this was a more efficient option. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's another business on these differential carriers that we do with Detroit Diesel. The previous generation ran for 12 years. Right. The current generation is now 4 years old, but I don't know if or when they will even start working on the next generation. Right. So that's it's hard for us to estimate, because some of these are just going to be, you know, life of the product businesses with the potential. If there's a replacement product coming, we might be able to quote that business and win that replacement as well. And maybe go on for another 10 or 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about order book, it's difficult for us to put a frame around it.
So basically, your products are in that way far more generic, and the level of innovations are not much, because there are certain products in auto where it is very model specific. If the model does well, you get a benefit. If the model doesn't do well, even that lifetime contract value is just an indicative quantity, right? That's not an actual offtake. But for you, it is more of you.
So each product, to be honest, is individually spec to the customer we are supplying it to, right? So, but I'll just give you an example, right? The differential carrier, that so it's different for the light vehicle side, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the commercial vehicle. So if, let's say, for example, you know, Dana designs an axle, right? So the way that they design it is they're going to say, okay, this is going to be the size of my ring gear. These are going to be my gear ratios. You know, this is what I need to do. So this, that creates the envelope. These are the bearings I need to use for this. This is the stiffness I need. So based on this design envelope, they design the product, this axle, right? Now within that, it's not one gear ratio. There are multiple options of gear ratios that are there. So a new customer comes. Maybe the housing may change. The mounting points onto their suspension may change. But this is the core of the axle. This is where the power is coming in and into the axle and going out to the wheels, right? This typically will not change. They'll try to keep this common across families, right? So let's say, for example, they've got a, you know, 17-inch ring gear, they'll have one model for another model. For a, you know, 12-inch ring gear, they'll have another model. So they'll have a variety of these kind of models that are there, which generally continue on for years, but in many cases even decades. But in some cases, when they say, okay, I think I can make a technological improvement on in terms of reducing friction and improve efficiency, then they will get a, you know, they'll do some redesign of the gears. They'll do this based on that, you know, the shape of the carrier may need to change, the stresses may change, all of that, right? So then they may develop a new product.
And for exports, you primarily, you have a U.S. export.
Right. So at the moment, I think probably 80% of our exports goes to the U.S. Might be a little bit more now. Last year it was probably 80%. This year might be a little bit more. But we see some opportunities in Europe also that are coming, right?
And this 400 crore export business, how do you see ramping up in next 3 years?
Difficult question to answer. Some businesses will come and, you know, within 6 months we'll be in production. Some businesses will take us 3 years from the date they award us the business to get into production.
And the other way around, that currently it's around 25%
currently at 20%.
So it's 20%.
In the first quarter. So last year was 26, 27.
Last quarter, yes.
Last quarter, 30 something, yeah.
So going forward, what kind of proportion do you see coming from exports?
We think we can get to about a 40% kind of a number, and hopefully on an increased domestic base. As I mentioned, I am fairly optimistic about the CV industry and tippers.
That's
and
why I'm not asking percentage. I just want to focus more on exports. That, I know, like, can you think about this number actually doubling in next 3 to 4 years?
Yeah, we think we can, but I mean, will it? I don't know. I mean, it's a forward-looking statement, obviously, but
no, I mean, from your perspective,
for me,
order book, it's not only the confirmed orders, but let's say the pipeline of orders or the talks which you might be right now on. Like, does it give you that confidence that the traction in exports would be significantly higher than the domestic, or you think they both should be at this part?
No, no, I think exports is going to be a driver for us for sure. Right? I think exports is going to grow. That's what we believe, and that's I think it's shown up in history, but I think we will see it play out even more going forward.
And so what I understand, you also increased the capacity very recently, right?
In 2020.
From a utilization perspective, where are you right now on that?
So last year we did about, overall we did about 85,000, right?
Yeah, 85,000 production.
Yeah. You have to go back earlier. Yeah, that one. Right. So overall we did about 85,000 tons out of 160,000, right? So that's about like what 50 something percent, right? 52% something like that. Now, if what is realistically achievable would be probably a number of something around 80% or so. So we think we can get there within the next 2 to 3 years or so, that we can be at that number. The specifically, I think in the new plant utilization, I think in the last call also there was a question about it. Somewhere in the only in the 20s. I believe by the end of this financial year we'll be closer to the 40s, and then we'll look at.
So 101, like what is this part?
Utilization of the
new plant. New plant.
So it's on a 160,000 tons capacity. You're saying the peak production can be probably worth
1,25,000 to 1,30,000. Yeah.
And you're saying current year you will do 85,000 tons.
No, last year we did 85. This year I think we will grow for sure, double digit. Yeah.
So you will achieve that peak, you're saying, in FY26, means 3 years from now, right?
Something like that. Yeah. Hopefully sooner. I think we're trying to work on it to do it sooner, but.
But if that is the case, sir, the margins what you mentioned in terms of absolute rupees per kg, you said 10 rupees per kg in domestic and...
So 2 rupees spread, we are assuming that if we are increasing the export contribution.
No, what my question was, this EBITDA per kg spread is also a function of the volumes, right?
Correct. Yeah, exactly, right? There's three things in EBITDA per kg, right? One is our ability in terms of costs. Right, in terms of some of the variable costs, which we are doing in terms of some of the power purchases that we're doing and all of that. And the second thing is, some of this is also linked to volume.
Right.
So some of these so-called variable costs are actually not truly variable costs, because when you improve your efficiencies and you're running at higher volumes, what happens is once you melt the metal, you're immediately utilizing it because the demand is there. As opposed to melting the metal, then you have to hold it at temperature for some time and you lose some radiation losses and power costs that goes into that, right? So there's some of that elements involved. Other than that, there's also a better absorption of fixed costs, there's a better productivity per employee, all of these things that kind of come into the picture when the capacity goes up, which is the second one. And the third one is the product mix, right? In terms of the type of products that we believe are going to grow, and the higher value and the higher realization products going to grow. So I think between these, we believe number of about 1,25,000 to 1,30,000, we should be at about a 15 rupees per kg kind of a EBITDA number.
At
right?
a blended level.
At a blended level.
Right. So my question was actually, let's right now look at 85,000 tons what you did last year, right? On that you said you are at a 10 rupees per kg EBITDA for domestic and 20 rupees for exports, right?
Not 20.
Okay. Let's call it 15, 16, because there's some hidden cost in export that you kind of have to take out, right?
Right.
That
are, right. So now it was more specific in terms of, let's keep aside on a blended side, but let's say even the domestic volumes ramp up and the export volumes ramp up, that differential, let's say the domestic will move from, where do you see the bigger delta in terms of EBITDA per kg jump? Whether it would be on exports, which will move up from 15 to 20 rupees a kg, or is it the domestic, where you have a far more scope, which is volume driven?
I think we'll see it equally on both, right? Because then, unless we get some phenomenal realization business, or maybe there is some foreign business that we take, export business that we take for strategic reasons, which might be at, let's say, a lower margin, whatever, right? It's a strategic decision that sometimes we have to make, right? What kind of pricing model we want to follow and what kind of this thing. It will depend a little bit on that, but I think both should move up relatively evenly. I think probably the export might move up marginally more, mainly because some of the products that we started doing the business with were at a lower thing, because it was, I wouldn't call it entry pricing, but it was the pricing to get the foot in the door. And then later, you know, when the pricing is better, on once your foot is in the door and you're established fully, then obviously the risk in the mind is different and pricing can be better, right?
Just to understand the perspective, in the past, your numbers in terms of your sales, margins, everything has been very sticky and stable. What prompted us first, in the first quarter of 2020, to go for such a expansion on a new scale? Was there visibility in terms of the demand, or there was some clear-cut client order that we were getting and we were not able to cater to that? Second would be, was that CAPEX purely thought out from the exports perspective, that if you would like to increase our presence in exports and, you know, increase our proportion of complex-related materials that you mentioned?
So when we took that call, one, I think overall capacity utilization was also quite good at that particular point of time. There was a requirement of adding capacity. One of the things that we specifically decided to do in going for this system that we went for, which is what drove up prices, and as I think I mentioned to you earlier, right, there's probably half a dozen to less than a dozen of these across the world of this size. So we had this product range in mind for these larger products where we believe we could get a better realization.
Right.
And of course, it being the first time we're making these products, because we had the capability in terms of size and nobody else really does have the capability to make these products, the incubation time is longer, the testing periods are a little bit longer, being structural components. So it's taken us a little bit longer to get to, you know, where we need to be. And also for us, making molds and castings of this size has also been a learning experience in terms of some of the other facilities that are required to handle these kind of parts and some of the challenges that come with that. So that's something that's a little bit there. But at that point of time, we knew we had to add capacity. Right. This was in that 2018 time period that we took the decision and we started this project. The second one was we didn't just want to add capacity, we wanted to add capability. Right? Capability to produce more complex products and products that, again, fewer people can do, or in some cases nobody else can do, that we can have a better realization. And these were the two things.
In-house, right? We have not taken any outside help and technical expertise to develop these.
No,
products.
We've developed all these products in-house entirely.
Okay. So you're saying nobody in India and in the world, there are some products where it takes a long gestation period to get that technical knowledge.
Yeah. So what we do right now in the plant, we do a mix of two things. One, we'll be producing, let's say, in our existing line, which is, let's say, 1.2 meter by 1 meter. This is producing two parts in a mold. Now here we produce four parts in a mold. Right. So we've taken some business and put it that way, but there's a chunk of the business that is going to be these higher value parts, the larger ones that we produce on this line.
On the growth part, I just have one final question. At the end, your end user industry is your FMCG, which obviously have their own cycle and are quite fluctuating in nature and go with the economy also sometimes.
Yes.
Most of the time, just if I'm not wrong. So how do you plan on bringing about stable growth rate, because we have done a large CapEx and we want to utilize that to the maximum capacity possible. So how do you cater to the cyclical nature of the end user industry?
So
that is not changing, right?
Yeah, so I think it's all about flexibility, right? And what kind of flexibility we can do. So one of the things that we've done, if you look at all the lines that are here, these are all fully automated lines that we've put in, right? And you know, many of these are 2013, 2016, 2022, 2018, 2020, right? Those are the dates. One of the things that lets us do is be more flexible in terms of ramp up and ramp down, right? So while, you know, there's obviously some fixed costs related to maintenance and all of that, if you look at the overall picture of costs, right, in terms of selling price, I would say about 75% of our costs are all variable.
Okay.
Right? So that is something that helps us also manage in the downturn, right? So if you look at in terms of financial performance during, 1920, when the market just tanked completely, the margins weren't hit as badly, right? Because of the fact that there's still a very large portion that is variable.
Okay.
So you are only in castings, right?
Yes.
You have any plans to get into forgings?
None at the moment, no.
Okay, and in castings, which are, means there are auto as well as non-auto segments for you?
Yeah. The non-auto is very small, it's mostly an off-highway or railways, right? Exactly. So overall, domestically, that probably adds up to about, 5-6%. And on an export also, it's probably, if you add exports also, it's maybe another 2-3% or something like that, right? So overall, relatively, small non-auto, so to speak, right? If you consider, in India, tractor is considered to be automotive, right? Not in other parts of the world, but certainly in India, because of the volumes, it's considered to be part of the automotive basket.
And sir, in your casting business, who would be the top six from India?
Good question. In terms of exports, I think we will be there, no?
Yeah, definitely.
I think Brakes India is
there. We are the largest
right?
producer of LG casting in India. Okay.
Sorry?
The ductile end casting. We produce two types of casting. One is ductile and grey casting.
Yeah.
Definitely, the ductile end, we are the largest in India.
In
obviously, our exports
yeah.
also.
Okay.
So, the other one would be Brakes India, which used to be a joint venture between the TVS Group and the ZF. It's since this thing, but they supply a lot of the ZF global requirements and some Volvo requirements out of India.
So, the smaller components to different segments.
Yeah. So, most of their components will be in the size range of 0 to 5 kgs. Most of our components will probably be in the size range of 10 to 300 kgs or 400 kgs kind of thing, right?
Rico does the casting, right?
Yeah, they also do, yes.
They are pretty big, right?
I'm not sure their exact size in this thing, but I think... But again, they are in that 0 to 5 kg range only, mostly.
Which is a high margin range, the aluminum casting?
So, yeah, aluminum is a different story, because aluminum, I don't track it as much since we don't...
We do only iron casting.
Okay. And you have any plans to get into aluminum?
Next 2 years, no. Perhaps after that, we will consider it. It's just, I think we see a huge opportunity here within what we're doing in iron casting, and I think an area that we know well. So it's just a question about resources and, where we want to focus our resources. So I don't see that happening in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. At that point of time, we'll have to see, what's going to be the best utilization of our resources, right?
It is more to do with even the kind of exposure you have, MHC versus the because the people on the PVs and all want to go for a lighter weight. That's where the aluminum comes into the picture.
Yeah.
So you are actually not looking that as an opportunity. Right now you're saying there's too much in the...
Yes.
Okay. And the orders, what you are actually, this 100 crore revenue moving to 400 crore, right? So based on your discussion, this new increased order, what you are getting, it has actually been shifted from some other countries, or it is just that?
Typically it's domestic. There is one business, so it won't be significant. It's not in that 330 crores that was there last year, but 5-10 crores a year kind of thing, where it's a China plus one strategy that's coming.
That's the only, out of that, you can attribute China plus one only 5-10 crores. So this new orders what you are getting, actually those orders must be placed by the same OEMs to someone else, but that was not to China, you mean to say?
It was usually domestic, right? If it was a US order, it was with a domestic...
So you are replacing a domestic. Okay.
And I have a question.
Hi. This is from Avendis.
Avendis.
Just a quick question, Deepak. Since you're in the ferrous casting space, right? And assuming it's more of the engine family components?
Almost less than 5% of our revenue comes either from the engine or the transmission, right? And most of that 5% is actually the transmission more than the engine. But very minuscule amount
but
coming from the engine.
But none of those 5Cs of the whole engine family, camshaft,
no.
or the housings?
No, none of it. At least
so,
at the moment.
So that way, you think you are more agnostic to the location?
So I'll explain electrification happening in commercial vehicles, right? Because we are largely not so much present in the light vehicle space, at least not domestically, right? And even export also is relatively new, maybe 10% or so is from the light vehicle space. When I look at it, that business of commercial vehicle, how would you... A truck be different from a regular truck, right? And there's two ways you can build a electric truck. One way is to say, I'm going to take the same architecture of the truck, I'm going to have the same axle, I'm going to have a propeller shaft running to the axle, and I'm just going to replace the engine and the transmission with an electric motor and maybe a tiny gearbox.
Sure.
Right? That is one approach that you could take, in which case all the products what we've talked about, right, except this, you know, 5% or so of our sales that we have today, don't get affected at all. They stay exactly. Unless you say, no, I'm going to put a very powerful motor, then you need to have a bigger this thing, and okay, it helps a little bit. But largely you can say it's going to be the same if the OEMs go down that route.
Yeah.
Right? But if e-trucks on the M&HCV side are going to be realistic in a longer, medium to longer term kind of a way, what is more likely to happen is that they will redesign it to be e-axles, which means you get rid of the entire propeller shaft. Right, and all the friction losses and everything associated with the having that and having, you know, and you instead mount the motor directly onto the axle. Right, so you have a couple of extra gears to kind of manage that, and then you have everything else, kind of everything is just contained within the axle. We recently won an order and we started the development process on something like this for a Class 8 truck in the US. Right. We found that the casting content in that truck goes up quite substantially in the axle. Obviously, it's reduced quite a bit on the transmission and all of that, but on the axle side, it actually goes up. So, just roughly speaking, right, a Class 8 6x4 truck, if you take in the US, a typical value that you might expect would be something from maybe around $300, $350, would be these two differential carriers that we're supplying. On this particular program, right now, what we're seeing a number that's around $900. So there's a fairly significant increase if that e-axle system takes off. I don't know if it will remain at $900, or let's say in the years to come as they optimize design, maybe it will come down to $700. But we're quite sure that if the e-axle is the way to go, which if electrification and M&HCV is going to be in the long run, people will design vehicles from scratch, and the e-axle will be what is used. In that scenario, we think that there's an opportunity for us.
Sure.
That being said, at least in India, the view is that on the M&HCV side for the haulage as well as the tippers and all of that, we need to move towards green hydrogen, internal combustion, rather than electrification. Right? That's what we are being told, that that all the OEMs believe that's the more likely long-term solution towards decarbonization and getting out of diesel. Right. They believe there might be an intermediate step of CNG that might happen, again, depending on, you know, availability, pricing of natural gas, all of these things. But they believe the long term is more likely to go towards hydrogen. But I think there are use cases even today where it makes sense to have a battery electric vehicle on these HCVs. Let's say, for example, you know, we have 3 trucks a day that we send to one of our machining vendors. And, you know, 150 kilometers there, 150 kilometers back. If it's here for about a few hours, it's there for about a few hours, perfect opportunity to charge the vehicle, all these things, right? So these kind of use cases, I think, will make sense, likely to for a battery electric. But where you have this, we call it as a jobbing foundry, right? Where you have this, you have a different part running tomorrow, you take a different part that's completely different. When you're doing a wide range of load cycles in a truck, then you want more flexibility, right? And that's where I think hydrogenized might come, probably play a bigger role.
And how would the ticket size be different for you in H2I sort of a category?
Same.
900? Or the existing 200?
No, existing 300, 350 or so, whatever it might be, right?
The new products in the export market, what is the replacement cycle of those products, like aftermarket?
So honestly, most of the products that we do are fit and forget, right? There's very little aftermarket demand for most of the products what we do. So it will be like minuscule. It's, and typically, so we are not directly in the aftermarket.
The growth is dependent on the production of new vehicles.
Yeah.
Entirely from the new segment.
Yeah, except maybe like for the railways, right? The brake discs that we're producing
keep
getting used over 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but replacement market is fairly negligible. I think these are lifetime products that we typically have on the product. So it's the replacement of the whole truck, right? Which might be a 10 or 15 year kind of a cycle that we are with.
So I have this one question, maybe the last question. That, you know, you use this word as to how do you allocate the resources, you know, in terms of planning the company forward. I see that you have 160,000 capacity which is operating in India, about 50%. You can actually expand it by another 50,000 tons without any meaningful capex, which means that you can go up to almost 10 to 20,000, right?
Really?
And the broad part of your operations, you have been actually significantly below WACC, and your ROCs have never been much better than the WACC. So, given the framework that you are in terms of MSCV cycles and stuff like that, and you still are like one of the best in terms of what you do, and still your return on capital employed is nowhere near to what ideally it should be for a player like you, which has a technical prowess and all. So how do we reconcile this part? And as a top management promoter, how do we really pick a call about allocating more resources to this business when it does not really make as much sense on the ROC side? Your perspective on that?
Sure. So I think, there is challenges on in terms of pricing, right, especially on the domestic side, because there are some legacy pricing formulas and all of that, right? And you can't just throw all of that out and go to a different level. But I think if you look at capacity utilization and kind of what we're trying to do in terms of increasing our capacity utilization, sort of, let's say, a lakh and 25, lakh and 30,000, we believe, and with the product mix improving as well in terms of more exports and better realizations, there's also a lot of internal efficiencies that will improve when we do that. We believe that we should be able to get to about a 15 rupees per kg kind of an EBITDA. So you can do the math in terms of, let's say, 1,25,000, 1,30,000 into 15. I think you'll find ROCEs will actually start looking quite good at that, 80% kind of a level, which is what we are working for, right? We believe that we can achieve that.
So that's more of what we discussed. I think, is there anything different that you would want to do than what you've been doing to make the business even more lucrative, or the resource allocation being a bit more lucrative? Is there any other different angle to this entire company that can come in, which is currently still under process of working?
So one of the things, like I said, right, the new plant gives us a lot of other capabilities. It's a little bit more of a slow gestation because of these bigger parts. We've never produced these before. We're trying to do these for the first time. So there is a certain learning curve that we've gone through as well. So, we could actually start seeing, significantly higher margins, start products and significantly higher realization products coming in that segment. But some of that is also a little bit of chicken and egg, right? So we believe at that point where we made this larger investment that the commercial vehicle axles on the heavy duty tippers could move to casting because they are much more long lasting, can withstand much more overloading and all of that, right? But it's a little chicken and egg, right? Nobody will design it because nobody can make it. Nobody will put in a capacity because nobody is there to this thing, right? So we took the first step in this, right? And we think today as we believe that we're starting to see that baseline start to form, right, where people are starting to make designs on this, right, and start. So we'll see that also play out a little bit, I think, over the next.
Because of positive time, we could not really interact much. I'll try and get in touch with you.
So
US market, the projections that we see for the next 9 months at least look quite strong. Our customers are guiding us to higher numbers. Both Dana as well as Detroit Diesel, who are two biggest in the US. So we don't know, obviously, some degree of uncertainty on the numbers, but one, I think we feel pretty confident about this part of it. The other one is also that, generally speaking, from a historical perspective, when the volumes come down, all the buyers are now scrambling around looking to see how much cost savings they can show, right? And when the numbers go up, they're all trying to scramble around and see how much capacity they can add. So I think even when things slow down, we'll get plenty of opportunities to get new business as well. And then when the cycle turns around, that will take to even higher, right? But I don't, with the new product pipeline that's there and inquiries and what we expect, I don't see really any scenario where I think exports will dip even if the market does dip, right? Unless extremely significant. I don't foresee that, at least not today. So hopefully whatever we just keep adding, maybe the addition will not go up that way, maybe it will go a little slower.
That's wonderful to hear that you're able to take that form.
Thank you so much.
We have made multiple.